MacCast, Wednesday, March 17th, 2021. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Happy St. Patrick's Day, I guess, if that's what you celebrate. And it's probably belated at this point. It's always weird to start out these shows because I'm recording on St. Patty's Day on Wednesday, but you'll probably hear this sometime later than that. So hopefully you had a good St. Patty's Day. Again, if you celebrate that sort of thing, hopefully you wore some green, didn't get pinched. I don't know what that's all about. Super confusing to me, but, you know, I'd love to, I probably should do some research and figure out the history behind that. Like, where does that come from? Is that just a, you know, school kid thing? Is it only in the U.S.? I don't know. Is it something everybody does anywhere? If you happen to know, let me know. But hey, glad to be back here with you for another episode of the MacCast. We're going to be talking about all things Apple and Macintosh and iOS and all that fun stuff. Looking through the show notes, got quite a few things to talk about. We have some movement in Apple Car and manufacturing, at least some speculation on how Apple might be producing their Apple Cars. We know they've been looking into different ways of doing that, and there's some new information out this week that we'll be getting into. Also, some Apple TV Plus news, a few things going on there, including some major nominations. We've been kind of in award season, and Apple's been getting a few nominations and accolades for their programming, and they continued that this week. So we'll talk about that a little bit. We're expecting an Apple event maybe sometime soon. We'll update you on what's happening there. Talk about maybe some new features and functionality coming to the iPhone this year that we speculated on, but looking like it might be a little bit more solid at this point in the rumor mill. And we'll also talk about upcoming or possible upcoming Macs. And that will round out the news for this week. And then we're going to get into some of your feedback. We're going to talk about discontinued Apple products. I'm going to try and help a listener out with a question regarding screenshots. Actually, that was a rabbit hole that I went down. It started with a screenshot question, but I have a really cool, some really cool tips and tricks for you that sort of spun off from that. I even learned some things this week, as I often do when I'm answering questions for the community. I'm going to talk about iCloud and how you might fix problems that you're having there. So get into a little iCloud troubleshooting. Talk about syncing content to your devices. And also, I have a pretty neat little thing of the moment that I came across this past week that I thought I would share with you. And that will round out this episode of the MacCast. So should be a great episode. Before we get into it, though, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, long-running sponsor of the show, Smile. We love Smile here at the MacCast. As you know, I use all of their products, but one of my favorites is Text Expander. And that's because, you know, it's just a handy tool to have. It saves you a ton of time, of course. I mean, we've talked about that before. You basically write little snippets, or type out little snippets, rather, and it will expand into longer bits of text. And it has a bunch of great, powerful features. You can really customize your snippets. You can add things like fill-ins. You can do conditional text. You can do scripting, all this sort of tough stuff. And it just makes repetitive typing tasks a lot easier. It also can handle things like mistakes. I have snippets set up for like common typing errors that I make. Yeah, we all make those common typing errors. Download is one for me. The word download, I'm constantly, for whatever reason, mistyping the O and the A. I have a little Text Expander snippet for that, and it just auto-corrects it for me. So it just saves me time over and over again. And as you might imagine, I've been using Text Expander for years, so I have probably hundreds of snippets at this point. I use a ton of them to help me answer emails and do things like that on the MacCast, and that is valuable time that I get back every time I use Text Expander. But what amazes me is I'm constantly finding new uses for it as well. I'm constantly adding to my staple of snippets, and that actually came up this week, and we're going to get to that later in the show. So it is super powerful. The latest version of Text Expander also has a bunch of new and improved features, including all kinds of new statistics, so you can actually see how much time you're saving. And that's great if you want to get Text Expander for your organization, because it is really great for teams, especially like sales teams and customer service teams. You can then build reports and show the return on investment that Text Expander is going to bring you. And believe me, you will get it, because it saves time, and time is ultimately money, right? And a cool thing too is your organization doesn't even have to be on Mac or iOS, because Text Expander is available, of course, for Mac and iOS, but also for Windows, for Chrome. You can get it across all your platforms. You can share those snippets across all your platforms, sync everything up, sync it up with your teams, get everybody on the same page. It is amazing. So if you haven't checked it out, you really should head to textexpander.com/podcast to get all the details. But also be aware that MacCast listeners are going to get 20% off their first year of Text Expander. So all you have to do, visit textexpander.com/podcast, learn more about Text Expander, and get 20% off your first year just for being a MacCast listener. And a huge, huge thanks to Smile for their support of the MacCast. I think at this point now, we've probably been talking about Apple's rumored autonomous vehicle, electric vehicle project for a few years now. We had rumors way, way back when about Project Titan, and it's gone through several iterations and changes, everything from Apple actually making a car, moving on to just, nope, they're doing an autonomous car driving system. They might even be doing just internal vehicles for employees. Like, we've run the gamut of the rumors. And more recently, it's looking like Apple may be considering at some point actually producing an Apple-branded vehicle. And the more recent rumors we've been discussing, of course, are, hey, if Apple makes a vehicle, how are they actually going to produce it? And what we're hearing this week is that they may end up having to build those cars in the same way they build iPhones, or very similar in terms of at least how they work with manufacturing partners. And this is the latest in a report from Bloomberg. We know that Apple had been making the rounds and talking to a number of automobile manufacturers across the globe. We talked about Kia, we talked about Hyundai, we talked about Toyota. So they've been getting around, having a lot of talks, and a lot of information's been getting out. And basically what they've been trying to do is find a manufacturing partner, someone they can work with. And they really were in discussions mostly with the traditional automakers. At least that was kind of what we were hearing. Now, apparently, almost all of those talks have broken down, and mainly because automakers, they don't want to make cars for their what it will likely become their competitors. Basically, they don't want to be contract producers for vehicles for a company like Apple. It's just really not what they do. I think they were probably looking more for a partnership where Apple would supply technologies and those sorts of things, and then they would manufacture and brand the vehicles as their own. And that probably wasn't what Apple was looking for. So they just weren't coming to terms with each other. So now it looks like what Apple is going to do is turn to some other partners, folks like Foxconn, and you may recognize that name because that's who Apple partners with for their iPhones, or also a company called Magna, which is a Canadian manufacturer of automobile components. And they do manufacturing and assembly for companies like GM, Ford, BMW, and even Tesla. So they'll produce parts or components or do assembly for automobile manufacturers. And they have facilities throughout North America, I think throughout the globe, but a bunch of facilities in North America, Canada, Mexico, the United States. And it's sounding like Apple might partner with them. Foxconn might be a good choice, because you may remember we talked about the fact that Foxconn actually has shown off their own electric vehicle platform. And of course, Apple has a pretty good working relationship with Foxconn in terms of setting up factories and facilities. So the piece basically says that Apple plans to change the assumptions about how cars work, that they're going to try and change up how, you know, all parts of it are done, how it looks, the design, how seats are made, how they function, right? They're really looking to do the Apple thing that they normally do, which is completely disrupt the industry. And they're going to need a partner to help with that. So they're going to provide all the designs and all of the technology and the and thought that goes into the vehicle. And they really need somebody to just execute on that. And as you might imagine, if they were to try to like spin up their own plants or factories from scratch, one, that's going to take a really long time. Two, it's going to be really, really costly. I mean, we've seen that with a company like Tesla, and look how long it takes to get profitable. And so you'll spend a lot of money on that. There's not a lot of margin in it. And so Apple would rather do like they do with iPhones or their Apple Silicon, work with a partner, do all that upfront work, that design, that development, the R&D, and then pass the manufacturing off to somebody who they would just contract with. So it's looking like that's the direction they're going to want to move in. And at this point, because a lot of the automobile manufacturers really don't seem too interested in partnering with Apple, it's probably going to go to a company like Foxconn or Magna. So we'll have to see if they can use that same model, the same model they use for Apple Silicon and iPhones, to produce cars. But it may be the direction that they're moving in, and it'll get us a few steps closer. Now, again, we're not expecting to see Apple cars anytime soon. The earliest time frame seems to be around 2023. I think that would even potentially be aggressive. So 2023 to 2025, maybe we'll see an Apple car. They could also just ditch the project entirely, right? That doesn't, just because they're working on it doesn't mean they're actually going to proceed with it. It could change. So it's many, many years away, but it's fun to kind of think about, you know, us driving around in an Apple car. I still have my speculation that they could turn to something like a car as a service. So they produce vehicles, but we don't actually buy them. We just subscribe to a service and have access to autonomous vehicles that we can call up from our iPhones or iPads or Apple Watches or Apple visors, glasses, whatever it might be. And then it just takes us where we need to go. We get out and it drives off and picks up someone else. So, you know, like an Uber or a Lyft service, but without a driver and backed by Apple. So I think that's an interesting model, certainly disruptive. I haven't heard too many people speculating the same way. So I think I'm pretty much alone in that theory. A lot of people are very interested apparently in just buying an Apple branded car. So we'll have to see which way it goes, but that's the latest on what's happening there. Now, one feature an Apple car might have is the ability to see further. So we're starting to hear a little bit about some of the technologies, those technologies that Apple might want to put in to kind of disrupt the current industry. And where this is coming from is this week there was a patent that was granted to Apple for a night vision system that combines visible light, near infrared, and long wave infrared sensors. And Apple claims that this system would allow the vehicle to quote unquote see three times farther at night than a human driver. And obviously that has great implications for safety, something that autonomous vehicles are, you know, have to prove themselves with, I guess. That's why we don't have full autonomous vehicles yet. And this could be a system that could help drive that a little bit further. So I tend not to talk too much about patent stuff as it relates to Apple, but this one was a little bit interesting to me because it ties back to some of the things we're talking about here with new technologies that may potentially arrive in an Apple car. So I don't know. Are you excited about an Apple car? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. So let me know. What would you be in line if Apple said tomorrow, hey, we're producing a car? I have a feeling a lot of us Apple fans, we would, just by the sheer fact that it has the Apple name attached to it. But it's rumored to be pretty pricey as well. We're expecting Apple to hit the high end of the market, so it may not be affordable for most of us. According to Deadline, Apple has signed a first look deal for feature films with Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's Imagine Production Company. You may remember that Apple already had a first look deal with the company for documentaries. As a matter of fact, the film Dads, which came out around Father's Day, I believe, last year, was one of the films that came from that deal. But now they've inked a first look deal for feature films from Imagine. At one point, Apple had actually tried to purchase Imagine, and Howard and Grazer ultimately turned them down in favor of this first look deal. So, you know, these deals are pretty good for Apple. It means they're going to have the opportunity for any new film projects coming from Imagine to decide if they want to bring them to the Apple TV Plus service or pass on them and let them go out to other companies. So, you know, Apple trying to build up the content for their new TV Plus service, and this is a great way for them to be able to do that. And, you know, Imagine, they make some pretty great films. Ron Howard, great director, Brian Grazer, you know, these are great producers. And so, you know, Apple's always trying to go after that quality and getting these kinds of A-list companies to work exclusively with them, or at least offer them up these first looks, is a great way to achieve that. And as a matter of fact, Apple also inked a first look deal for television shows coming from Mountain A, which is a production company founded by Natalie Portman and Sophia Moss. Along with this announcement, they also had it coincide with some news that Natalie Portman will star in a new Apple TV Plus limited series called Lady in the Lake. So Apple racking up a number of first look deals. You know, these are two of the latest, but we've talked about a lot of them in the past. And again, ultimately a good thing for the Apple TV Plus service. Deadline is also reporting that Apple has signed a deal for a new documentary film called The Jet. This one's interesting because it's a project being brought to us by the same team that did the McMillions documentary on HBO. That was the documentary about the Monopoly game at McDonald's. And very interesting if you haven't seen it. The producers of that, or the creators of that, are James Lee Hernandez and Brian Lazarette. And The Jet, this is going to be about the 1990s Pepsi campaign for Pepsi points. They basically had this campaign running where you could collect, I think, caps from Pepsi bottles and things like that, and you would get points. So you would drink Pepsi, you would get these points, and then you could take the points and trade them in mostly for swag, you know, Pepsi t-shirts, Pepsi leather jackets, all that sort of stuff. They kind of had this catalog that they produced. And what they did is they had a TV advertisement that talked about the kinds of things you can get for your Pepsi points. And kind of the kicker at the end of it was that for 7 million Pepsi points, you could get a Harrier jet. And of course, the ad agency and Pepsi themselves figured no one's ever going to get 7 million Pepsi points. And you can imagine exactly what happened. Of course, someone did. And a lawsuit followed. Now, Pepsi claimed the jet offer was just meant to be a joke. Obviously, the person who collected 7 million Pepsi points didn't think so. And a whole story proceeded from there. And that's basically going to be the premise of this documentary. So to me, being somewhat of that era, it was a little later in my young adulthood, but sounds very interesting to me. And if the sort of entertainment value of McMillions is any kind of indication, I think it should be a fun documentary coming to Apple TV Plus. And then finally, in Apple TV Plus news, we've been talking about the awards season. Apple has received a number of nominations across things like the Golden Globes and SAG Awards and all that sort of stuff. This week, we heard that Apple has two films nominated for Oscars, their first nominations for content coming from the Apple TV Plus service. The animated film Wolfwalkers has been nominated for Best Animated Feature, and the Tom Hanks film Greyhound has been nominated for Best Sound. And as a matter of fact, also this week, both those films received British Academy of Film and Television Arts nominations for the same categories. So well done, Apple. You know, it's pretty big deal that in the first year, basically, of a new service, they're getting the kinds of awards and accolades for their programming in these award shows that they have been this year. And I mainly point this out because, again, when Apple launched or announced the service and they kind of had a limited amount of content, a lot of people were very critical of that strategy. And Apple's response was basically, look, we're focusing on quality really versus quantity. And I personally think they've done a pretty good job of it. Now, is that ultimately going to sell subscriptions and make the service profitable and something that Apple can continue? I think only time is going to tell on that. Obviously, they're building out with all this news we've been talking about over the last year and all these new programs and TV shows and first look deals and stuff like that. Obviously, they're working to build up that catalog and library, but I don't think they're ever going to be at a level of a Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu or even like a Disney Plus. So what does that mean? Does that leave space for Apple in the marketplace? So far, they've been kind of surviving, as many people point out, by continuing to extend their free offer. So we're going to have to wait till see, I think, when that shuts down, if the service really can take off or continue. But again, I think the advantage that Apple has is they're not playing on a level playing field. You know, the subscription service, the TV service is not their main or only source of revenue. So I think they could continue to sort of fund internally the streaming service efforts, even if it's running at a minimal to low profit margin, while they build up content and deals and sort of make a name for themselves. And we've seen them do this before with things like Apple Music, right? They're not the biggest, but they've done a really good job building that up and expanding it and creating something out of it where folks didn't really think that they would be able to compete. And they've proven themselves time and time again. So I think we got to give them a little bit of time on Apple TV Plus. I'm enjoying a lot of the programming there. I know a lot of you are as well. So we'll just have to wait and see. But it's good to see them getting some credit for the work that they've done, and also for, you know, lining up a bunch of new content for us to maybe keep the service going. As you probably know, especially if you've been listening to this podcast over the last few weeks, there has been heavy rumors and speculation that Apple was planning some sort of event to happen in the first half, or the first quarter, rather, of this year. As a matter of fact, this week we were hearing, at least early in the week, that Apple could be holding an event on March 23rd, potentially to announce new products, including iPad Pros, AirTags, and new AirPods. That now we're hearing is likely not happening, at least according to recent reports from Ming-Chi Kuo and others. Kuo has said specifically that the AirPods 3 are not ready to enter into mass production and won't be ready to do so until at least the third quarter of 2021. Kuo says that he is expecting Apple to actually see declines in their headphone products in 2021 as they sort of face more competition. And he speculates that Apple may even continue to sell the AirPods 2 at a lower price point when the AirPods 3 come out to kind of balance that out. So Apple typically does this. I don't think that's too surprising of a revelation, right? They're going to expand the line out. They're going to offer more price points as their products mature. They like to have different price point levels, especially an entry level and a high-end level. So they have already rolled out the AirPods Pro Max on the high-end. We have the AirPods Pro, and of course we have the AirPods. Now we could have the AirPods 2 entry-level product, AirPods 3, AirPods Pro, and then the Max, which will fill out the lineup, giving you price points across the board with different designs and different features. And speaking of those features for the AirPods 3, they're rumored to bring an AirPods Pro-like design, but without some of the higher-end AirPods Pro features, things like the silicone ear tips. So those wouldn't be part of the AirPods 3, so they basically maintain a similar, you know, in-ear design as the AirPods 2, and then they also wouldn't offer higher-end features like noise cancellation. But of course, they'd have things like upgraded batteries, a case design that looks more like the AirPods Pro, the shorter stems, and potentially upgraded wireless connectivity. So would be a nice addition, but probably are not coming, at least according to Ming-Chi Kuo, until sometime in the third quarter. The other thing we were expecting to hear about soon and to hear announced is, of course, updated iPad Pros. There, we're expecting to see updated processors, maybe new A14 processors, and possibly mini LED displays, at least on the 12.9-inch model. There's also now some speculation that Apple could potentially be adding Thunderbolt support to the iPad Pro, really moving it into that Pro space, opening up the connectivity for options like external monitors, hard drives, and other high-speed peripherals. And DigiTimes is reporting again that the new iPads probably won't even enter production until the second quarter of 2021. So just another indication that we're probably not getting a March event. We might not even get a, you know, April event, although that's still being kind of kicked around in the rumor mill, but definitely April would be the earliest we would see the next event. Probably it's going to get kicked into maybe even May. So I wouldn't hold your breath. Of course, the other thing we've been waiting on for a very long time is the AirTags. The AirTags were supposed to get announced at this next event as well. It's sounding like all of these products have probably been pushed back in terms of an announcement until sometime in the second quarter. So we're going to have to wait on that. I have to say, too, another product that's rumored to be being potentially updated is the Apple TV. I can't wait for that product to come out because I've been in the market for a new Apple TV. I've been eyeing that Apple TV 4K, but I know Apple's about to do an update at some point, and my Apple TV 4 is basically getting long in the tooth. So I'm ready to upgrade, but Apple, I guess, isn't quite ready to have a new product out. So as soon as that hits, and I'm hoping that will happen with the next event, I'm probably going to jump on that bandwagon. But, you know, what new products are you looking forward to? I'd love to hear what you're thinking. Shoot me an email. Send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. I want to know what you think. Do you think Touch ID is coming back? You know, we've had Face ID. I sort of downplayed it when it was first announced. You know, I was a really big fan of Touch ID, and I can say pretty much at this point, I'm converted over to Face ID. I absolutely love it. I think it works great. I think it's a great technology. And at this point, I don't feel like I'm missing Touch ID anymore. It's interesting to think about it possibly coming back, and at least a couple of analysts at Barclays think it's definitely on the way and will even arrive in this year's iPhone 13 models. They say it's very likely that we're going to get under-display fingerprint scanners, and we've been hearing about this rumor for a while. The main reason we feel like Apple hasn't implemented it yet is the technology just hasn't been as good, at least from a biometric and security standpoint, as the Touch ID technology that Apple built originally for the iPhone or the Face ID technology. So, you know, Apple has some pretty high standards, and whatever technology they implement in an under-display Touch ID would have to, I think, meet those as a minimum requirement. I don't think Apple would be willing to take a step back. So if they are going to launch something like that this year, you have to imagine that it's going to be really, really good. Now, again, my question is, do we need it back? I guess, you know, for folks who live in certain environments or maybe have to deal with things like face coverings and that sort of stuff, Touch ID might be a better option. And to have the option of both, either Face ID or Touch ID, could be very, very appealing. I didn't really think it was going to happen this year. There hasn't been a lot of strong rumors indicating that that's what's going to happen. This is really the first strong rumor we've heard that it could come back this year. I figured it might be even a little further off, but Barclays, they seem to think it possibly is coming this year, and they've gotten some rumors right in the past. So, you know, we'll take it with a grain of salt, but might be one of the new features. They also went on to reiterate some of the other rumors we've been hearing with regards to this year's model iPhone, including things like the fact that they could have a smaller notch and that Apple's LiDAR scanners would be in all of the models in the updated cameras. In addition, they also claim that by 2022, the notch will go through a, quote, even bigger design change. And that may be harkening back to one of the rumors we talked about on the last episode of the MacCast, that Apple could be looking at a, you know, through-hole design, basically just a hole for the camera like some of the other Android phones have adopted for the front-facing camera, for the FaceTime camera. I'm still a little bit confused there because, again, there's a lot of other sensors that go into making Face ID technology work. So, you know, that gets me worried that maybe if Apple's moving back to under-display Touch ID, that they might be looking at rolling back and completely ditching Face ID in a future model iPhone. And now that they've got me hooked on Face ID, I don't know how I feel about that. I guess I'm going to be okay with whatever Apple ultimately does because I'm an Apple fan and I'm going to buy whatever iPhone they decide to deliver with whatever technology they want me to have. But again, I kind of like Face ID. I don't know. What do you guys think about this? It's interesting times. Nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, to flip-flop on sort of biometrics feels a little bit weird at this point. I don't know. I thought we moved forward to Face ID, and Touch ID now feels like it would be a step back, but it probably really isn't. It's just, you know, how I'm feeling about it in the moment. There was an interesting report this week about the aluminum band on an iPhone Red, or a Red iPhone 12, is that how you say that? Basically a product Red iPhone 12. And it was being reported on by 9to5 Mac. They had someone coming forward to say that the color in the aluminum band on their iPhone was basically fading on one corner. And they're saying, you know, we're trying to figure out, is this a potential defect? Is there something wrong with the iPhone 12 and the aluminum band? So far, I think we've only heard specifically of this one report with regards to the iPhone 12, but 9to5 Mac did note that there is a number of posts on Apple's discussion forums of similar fading on aluminum bands in other models of iPhone, including iPhone 11s and iPhone SE 2 models. Of course, did the thing when you read this. I have my iPhone typically in a case, my iPhone 12. I popped open my case, I looked at my band, and I'm not noticing any fading on mine. It's unclear why this particular model has fading on it, or if it's limited to only some iPhones. Is it a bad batch? Is it something to do with the case that this iPhone was in? Is it using some kind of cheaper material, or some sort of specific material that may be chemically reacting with the phone? Did it come in contact with some kind of corrosive material? It's really not clear. It's obviously too early to speculate that this is any kind of problem with the iPhone. It's just really interesting when this stuff comes up. To me, it's interesting because, you know, these people claim, oh, nope, I'm not in a weird environment. I, you know, don't have any chemical contact. This is a defect with the iPhone. But honestly, I was looking at the pictures and I was thinking, hey, that actually looks kind of cool. It's like, you know, a little bit of age to your iPhone. It's got this nice little patina on the corner where it's wearing, it's showing its usage. And I kind of like that sort of stuff, right? I don't know how you feel about it, but, you know, even to me, I used to get really hung up about scratches and dents and dings and things like that. But I realized, and maybe it's just my age or something like that, I don't know if you come to this realization, but at some point, these things are tools, right? They're daily things that I use. And something, when it gets wear or shows signs of wear, really, to me, shows that it's loved, it's used, it's a utilitarian product. And as beautiful as the products are. And I think even Steve Jobs talked about this a little bit, the fact that he enjoyed products when they had that kind of age. They were meant to be used. They're meant to be useful things. And of course, as we use them, they're going to get these bits of character added to them. So if you look at it that way, I don't think it's really that big a deal. And I just thought it was kind of cool. You know, it's like, it's got some, it's not just all uniform. It's not pristine. It's got this nice little aged patina to it. But that's just my opinion. You probably disagree with me. There's probably a number of you just yelling at your phones right now, thinking I'm totally crazy. But that's kind of the way I saw it. Again, I brought it up because I think it's an interesting story. Is it a rampant problem? I highly doubt it. We're not hearing a lot of reports of this, but it was interesting to me nonetheless. Something a little less interesting that happened, at least for me this week, but maybe is interesting to you, is that it looks like Apple's HomePod is done, at least the full-size, you know, large version of the HomePod. This is according to TechCrunch. They say that Apple has officially discontinued the product, and I think this is actually confirmed by Apple, but the report came out from TechCrunch. Apple did say that they will continue to be selling the HomePod Mini, but just that the HomePod is only going to continue to be available while supplies last. So I'm a little bit disappointed by that. I'm a big fan of the HomePod. I absolutely love mine. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about the HomePod later. And I, of course, recognize that maybe it wasn't a big seller for Apple, but personally, I thought it was a good product. And then finally, in the news for this week, iMacs. We know that Apple is working on Apple Silicon versions of all of their Macs. And of course, one of the models that we're expecting to see an update to probably pretty soon or fairly soon would be the iMac. And this past week, a developer noticed that an iMac model with an ARM 64 processor, basically what should be an Apple Silicon processor, showed up in a crash report for his software. So that, of course, is leading to speculation that new iMacs are out there in the wild, at least maybe with some Apple, you know, developers or internal testers, and that they could be on their way. We've also seen some other signs that an iMac update might be coming soon, including dwindling supplies of current models, specifically a number of the 21.5-inch iMac configurations on Apple's website are not available to purchase. They're out of stock, and that can tend to be a sign, not always a sign, but can tend to be a sign that new models might be on the way, Apple kind of reducing down stock. And also, we know from last week that Apple had decided to discontinue the iMac Pro. And with the performance of Apple Silicon, it may be that, you know, there's just not a place for an iMac Pro when new models come out, because they're going to seriously outperform the existing models. So Apple could be clearing the slate to get ready for some new ones. If they are, new iMacs are rumored to be picking up a new design. I think we've talked about this a little bit. It's supposedly inspired by the Apple Pro Display XDR. Basically, they could lose the iconic chin that we've always had on the front of the iMac in favor of an all display design. So, you know, it would basically look just like a display, but be an iMac. And I think that could look really, really cool. There's also been rumors that a 24-inch model may replace the current 21.5-inch version. And we've been hearing that there could be a return to colors in the iMac, picking up color options that are very similar to this year's iPads. So the space gray, silver, rose gold, green, and sky blue colors. There's no word on whether or not, along with those, would we be getting matching accessories like smart keyboards and magic trackpads in matching colors. They, of course, did that when they added the space gray for the iMac Pro, so it'd be cool if we could get various colors. But we'll have to wait and see on that one. I'm super excited about new Apple Silicon machines. It'll be interesting to see. I would speculate and assume that they would have the next version of an Apple Silicon processor, so they would update from the M1 to some other design, whether they call it an M2 or an M1X or whatever it might be. We don't really know at this point. But they are likely to have, if the current MacBook and, 13-inch MacBook Pro and Mac Mini Apple M1 machines are any indication, they're going to be screaming in terms of their performance. And speaking of performance, if Apple does give us new iMacs soon, looks like Adobe Photoshop is going to be primed and ready, because this past week, Adobe did update Photoshop to have native support for Apple Silicon. And right now, the numbers are looking really, really good. So if you're a designer and you're looking to up your performance game when it comes to Photoshop, yeah, you're going to want to get an Apple Silicon machine, because Adobe says that Photoshop running on an M1 MacBook runs 50% faster compared to Photoshop on a 2019 Intel-based MacBook with a similar configuration. So you get a huge bump in performance, and Adobe said that's really allowing them to do some amazing things with Photoshop. So the future is looking pretty bright for Apple, Apple Silicon, and Mac owners. It's expected that Apple is going to have a big, big year with Mac sales because of all these new models coming out. I know a lot of us in our community are excited to do upgrades. I'm going to not be upgrading for a while, because I did just upgrade to my 16-inch MacBook Pro, and it's going to serve me fine for a number of years. But I have to tell you, I'm going to be very tempted by all that sexy Apple Silicon and all that performance. I don't have really high performance needs. And, you know, as you know, we've talked about on the show, my philosophy is you buy a Mac when you need it and get the best configuration that you possibly can. And just this last year, I had a specific need to get a new machine. And, you know, this was the best one available to me, and I absolutely love it. The touch bar, I've got the touch bar. Don't use it too much. I'm trying to use it a little bit more. I think last week my thing of the moment was actually a touch bar pick that someone sent me. So I'm getting used to it. I probably will really want a new M1 machine, but, you know, I'm going to stick with what I have for now. But, you know, it's just a really exciting time to be an Apple fan and a Mac owner. And it's really great after all the years of iPads and iPhones and all that stuff, and really feeling like the Mac wasn't getting a lot of love, that we're getting a lot of love for the Macintosh right now. So it's just a fun time to be an Apple fan and a fan of the Mac. So it's really, really cool to see. So excited about that. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple of show sponsors, starting with Grammarly. You know, I think I talked about this. I am a podcaster for a reason. I find it very easy to speak what I want. I tend to work in outlines. And while I can write, when it comes to writing, I really, really struggle. I can struggle for words. I can struggle with how I want to communicate things. And Grammarly Premium has been an enormous help to me when it comes to that. I often struggle with things like conciseness in my communication, especially at work, you know, being direct, being forceful, but not overbearing, right? I struggle. Sometimes I come across too easy, you know, like I'm a pretty laid back guy. And so I really struggle with that. I also tend to be a little bit redundant in my communication. And that's why one of my favorite features about Grammarly Premium is the clarity suggestions. It really helping me craft my communication to be clearer, more crisp, more concise, more direct. And it's really, really amazing. And I'm able to kind of set my goals and say, hey, I want to be more confident in my communication. And Grammarly Premium helps me get there with suggestions. And with all the great suggestions and feedback Grammarly is providing me, I feel like I'm really leveling up my writing skills to the next level. I'm learning from the software, and that's really cool too. I'm learning how to craft what I want to say and make my communication better. And since it's in all the places that I'm writing, on my Mac, in Safari, in Microsoft Word, on my iPad. It's there when I need it, and I'm really loving it. So I encourage you to check it out. Elevate your writing with 20% off Grammarly Premium by signing up at grammarly.com/MacCast. That's 20% off Grammarly Premium at grammarly.com/MacCast. And a huge thank you to Grammarly for their support of the show. I'd also like to take this moment to thank Audible. Now, you likely know Audible. Audible is the leading provider of spoken word entertainment and audiobooks, ranging from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, languages, business motivation, and more, like original entertainment and now podcasts. And this is what I love about Audible. Audible has this amazing depth and variety to their catalog, literally thousands of audio titles. Plus, it's spoken word entertainment. I mean, you're listening to a podcast now. I love podcasts. I love spoken word stuff, and Audible has a ton of it. And it's a great way, I think, to escape and take a break from everything, you know, to move into another world. We've got so much happening these days. It's nice to get away, and Audible really allows you to do that. And as you might guess, I am a fan of sci-fi. So something I would recommend, if you've never listened to it, is Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card. It is a great book and a great experience on Audible to be able to sit back and just listen and escape into that world. I really love that sort of thing. And, you know, they also have great content for the things that you're into. I love Apple. I would imagine that you love Apple too. And they have great titles that can take you into the history of Apple. And one I would recommend that you check out is The Return to the Little Kingdom by Michael Moritz. It's more about the early days of Apple and all that Apple history. So you can get these and literally thousands of other titles at Audible. And Audible recently launched their newest plan, Audible Plus. With Audible Plus membership, you get full access to their entire Plus catalog, and it's filled with thousands of titles across different formats, from audiobooks to popular and exclusive podcasts to unique Audible originals like their Words Plus music series. And you can download or you can stream without limit, and you can listen offline anytime, anywhere. Just visit audible.com/TheMacCast or text The MacCast to 500-500 to start your free 30-day trial. That's audible.com/TheMacCast. And don't forget the in MacCast for that 30-day free trial. And a big thank you to Audible for their support of the show. Yeah, discontinued Apple products. We've had a few of those in the last couple episodes. One previously in the form of the iMac Pro and another in the form of the HomePod. And I thought we should talk about that a little bit. And as a matter of fact, on the last episode of the MacCast, I asked for some of your thoughts and opinions on the discontinuation of the iMac Pro. And I actually received this comment from Andy.
Hi Adam, it's Andy from the UK. I'm a long time listener to the MacCast, but this is the first time that I've taken the opportunity to send you some of my feedback. You asked in a recent episode what we thought about the discontinuation of the iMac Pro. Now, I have one of those machines. I was for a long time, my first Mac actually was a Mac Mini, but I quickly got a cheese grater Mac Pro. I had that for years because it was during the time when Apple weren't really releasing any new Pro machines. So it actually lasted me for 8 years. I then got a trash can Mac Pro. Well, we won't perhaps talk about that, but actually it was a fairly decent piece of kit. And I had that hooked up to an LG monitor, but when that died, I thought, right, okay, I need to look for something else. And we didn't know what was happening on the Pro front at the time. So I did have a look at what I had initially thought was a hugely expensive machine that nobody in their right mind would want to buy. But when I actually worked it out as a purchase for my business, an iMac Pro, funnily enough, did make sense. And there's no doubt, I don't regret it in any way. It's been the best computer, I think, that I've that I've owned, and that is, I've owned a few over the years. So you might think I'm disappointed that the iMac Pro has been discontinued. However, really, realistically, the reason that it's here, it's cooling, it's faster processor, all of these things kind of don't apply to Apple Silicon. It doesn't make sense to have an iMac Pro in the lineup. I think the new iMacs with the Apple Silicon are going to be just in a league of their own if the initial laptops are anything to go by. And I think really that they're all going to be great. They should all have pro level performance in them. I hope that they still produce space grey machines because I really like the look of it, the dark keyboard, the really dark Apple Magic Mouse. It's really fantastic. I love the look of it. So if they do something along that with the colours, yeah, as long as there's a space grey one in there, I'll be really pleased. I think there's one other thing to point out, and that is that for somebody like me, I use my machine really as two machines. So I have a Parallels desktop running Microsoft Windows, but I've been looking, and I was interested when you were running through your software recently, Adam, because I'm looking at ways that I can, when I eventually shift to Apple Silicon, how I can be using a machine that really doesn't need Windows anymore. And I kind of only use it for Microsoft SQL Server. I'm a web developer, the same as you, Adam. I code apps as well. So I think there is definitely a path for me to move to a future where there is no need for me to have Windows on my machine. And therefore, an Apple Silicon Mac will be the way to go. And I'm actually really excited about the future and the way it's going. So thank you very much for the Maccast. Adam, you accompany me when I'm out for a run very often, so I really appreciate that. And I love the show. Keep up the good work. All the best to you and your family.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate that. And at least one of us is getting some exercise. Yeah, I'm glad I can go on your run with you, at least in spirit, in voice, if not physically. I'm not into running. I try to get out and walk every once in a while, but even there, I struggle a little bit. But I totally agree with your sentiments across the board. I think the iMac Pro was a great machine, if not maybe a little bit overpriced. I mean, let's be honest, it was a pretty pricey machine. Did have a lot of performance. A lot of people really, really did love it. I agree with you on the colors. And I also agree with you, as we sort of talked about earlier in the show, about the reasons why Apple is likely discontinuing it with, you know, Apple Silicon-based iMacs probably coming down the road here pretty, pretty soon. And something Andy also mentioned in his email that I want to talk about is that other discontinued Apple product, the HomePod. And he was disappointed by that more than the discontinuation of the iMac Pro. And I totally agree with him. I know I love my HomePod. I think it's a really, really great product. And I have a HomePod Mini, and I love that too. It's great, but it just really isn't the same product at all. I don't even think the two are very close to each other. My HomePod can fill a room with sound much, much better than the HomePod Mini. It just sounds better to me. You know, it's not astronomically different, but it definitely is a better product. And I really feel like Apple didn't necessarily need to kill it. I think they could have made some adjustments. I don't know why Apple chose to put it at the price point that it's at. Maybe because of all the tech that's in there. So maybe they could have tweaked it or adjusted it a little bit to get it into a more competitive price point rather than killing it. Because I really feel like the price point was probably its biggest downfall. A couple people have also wrote to me and said they feel like one of the missteps that Apple made with the HomePod was how they positioned it in terms of being a smart speaker. And I think that's probably accurate too, because by that point, by the time Apple got around to releasing the HomePod, smart speakers were seen as these devices that were like the Alexa. You know, it was a $40, $50 product and not a $300 product. And Apple didn't do a very good job, I think, of selling that to the masses or even just to Apple fans. You know, $300 for Siri functionality seemed a little bit crazy, but it really is so much more than that. It's really about the audio, and the Siri functionality is kind of like a tack-on add-on bonus. And if they had really positioned it as a speaker system, something more competitive with something like a Sonos, that sort of thing, maybe they could have done a little bit better. But I think they still would have had to have the price point in a better range. I think if they could have had it around $200, $199, I always felt like $150 would have been the killer sweet spot, but I think there's too much tech in there to get it that low. I think at $199, Apple could have maybe taken a little bit less on their margins, but sold a ton more and maybe gotten a lot more traction for the HomePod. Because remember, you know, in comparison, the HomePod has a woofer and 7 tweeters versus the HomePod Mini with 1 full range driver. You've got 6 mics in the HomePod versus the 4 in the HomePod Mini. The HomePod Mini doesn't have the audio beamforming, which I think is an amazing technology. The HomePod is 802.11 AC versus only 802.11n Wi-Fi in the Mini. And they also, you know, the Minis don't work in the same way with the Apple TV. You can't take a pair of Minis and pair them up and have theater surround sound with a set of HomePod Minis. So there's some misses, and I think Apple's going to either have to kind of evolve the HomePod Mini or do something to make up the hole that they're leaving with the HomePod going away. And that's sort of my opinion on that. But I don't know, you know, what's your opinion on it? I know there's many of you out there who looked at the HomePod and sort of decided, yeah, it's not really a product that I need. And you're Apple fans. So where, in your opinion, was the miss with the HomePod? And was or is there anything that Apple could have done, to kind of save it beyond just maybe some of the things that I already recommended? So I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Again, similar. And if you have more thoughts on, you know, what's happening with iMacs, send those thoughts along as well. Then I look forward to hearing from you. Ready to see if we can help someone in the MacCast community solve a little bit of a, it's not even really a problem, it's just a feature, a functionality that they're looking for that really doesn't seem to exist out of the box on the Mac. And it's listener Rick. He wrote in and he said, hey, I'm looking to take screenshots of a web page, and I want to get the full web page and all of this stuff. You're probably going, well, yeah, you can do all of that on the Mac, and you certainly can. We'll talk about how you can do that in a couple of ways of it. But he says, I want to be able to get a full page, the full page in a screenshot, but I also want the URL bar to appear in the screenshot. And that's the tricky part, right? Because there are a couple of built-in ways to get a screenshot of the full page of a website in Safari. Probably the easiest option is to, when you're on a web page in Safari on the Mac, go under the File menu and choose the Export as PDF option. And when you do that, it will generate a PDF and it will be the entire contents of the web page. Of course, if you just try to take a standard screenshot with, you know, Command-Shift-3 or Command-Shift-4, you can get the URL bar, but you're not going to get the entire web page. And I think we also covered the other trick that you can do using the developer menu. This one's a little bit trickier, but if you want to get just like a PNG screenshot, I think it's PNG by default, but if you want to do that, you can go into the Safari settings, go into advanced, turn on the developer menu, and then when you're on the web page, right-click or control-click on the page, open up the inspector, and then select the main HTML element on the page and really right-click on that inside the inspector, and there's an option to capture a screenshot. And when you do that, it will capture a screenshot of, again, the entire web page, but once again, not meeting sort of the request that Rick is making. It just contains the contents of the web page and not any of the browser URL bar. And so I don't know of a way to do it, so I'm throwing it out to you in the community. If you know a way to kind of do what Rick is trying to do, let us know about it. The only thing I could come up with was a couple of workarounds. So, Rick, I'm not really sure why you want the URL bar in there. I'm assuming it's for reference purposes, so you know where that screenshot came from. And when you use the method that I described earlier, the export as PDF in Safari, the website URL actually gets captured as part of the metadata on the file. So I don't know if that would meet your need. Basically, if you go and select that file in the Finder and look at the information, or hit Command I and do get info on that file, in the more information section, you will see a piece of metadata called where from. And that where from actually contains the URL that that PDF file was generated from. So I don't know if that meets your need. That is also searchable through Spotlight and in the Finder. The issue there, though, is that if you want that PDF in an image format, of course, you can take that, you can open up that PDF in Preview, and you could export it to, say, a JPEG format or a PNG format. But unfortunately, when you do that, it loses that where from metadata. And so that got me thinking about, when I was looking to this, you know, this is where I went down this rabbit hole, got me thinking about metadata in the Finder and how these metadata attributes get assigned to files, because it's like different kinds of files get different types of metadata. So whereas the PDF has this where from data, just converting it or taking a standard screenshot does not have that data associated with it. So I thought, well, maybe there's a way to actually inject that data into a file on the Mac. And it turns out there actually is. There's a bunch of different types of metadata, of course. If you want to see the full metadata attributes, because what's displayed in the Finder isn't all of the metadata that's necessarily associated with the file. If you actually want to see the full metadata attributes, there's actually a terminal command that you can run. It's called MDLS, and I think it's just like metadata list, basically, I believe is what it stands for. At least that's what I'm saying in my head. But the MDLS command in the terminal, you can use that command and pass the path to the full file. The easiest way to do that normally is just open up the terminal window, type MDLS, and then hit a space, and then just drag the file that you want the metadata on into the terminal window, and that will copy the path to that file, the full path to that file, into the terminal window. You can hit enter, and then you will see all of the metadata attributes that are associated to that file and all of their values. And all of the keys, when you do that, you'll notice, have a KDM item prefix on them, and then all the individual bits of metadata, including things like where from, or maybe it has the pixel dimensions, or there's just a ton of metadata that can be associated with these files. And so, again, this got me thinking, like, is there a way we can actually write this data? And, of course, via the terminal, there is a command for that, too. There's the xattribute command, or xattr command. And with that command, you can use that to display the metadata. You can use it to modify the metadata on a file, or remove the extended attributes, basically, is what Apple calls it. And there's a flag, -w, that actually does the write option. So where this landed me was like, okay, great. So I can take the PDF, I can get that where from URL, I can convert that PDF to an image file in Preview, like a JPEG or a PNG, and now I can use this xattr command with the -w option to actually write additional metadata in the form of the where from metadata attribute to that file. So I looked up the command. It's pretty complicated. I have a version of it in the show notes at maccast.com if you want to get the full command. But basically, you run att-w and then you pass the metadata attribute in the form of that key, KMD item, where from's is actually the full metadata key, and then you have to pass the value. And the value that you pass in actually has to be a plist formatted bit of XML. So property list, it's kind of the settings in for a lot of things in Mac OS. And you pass that with a URL string, but it's all a chunk of XML, and it's, again, pretty complicated, too complicated to go through in audio. But if you want to see what it looks like, I have it in the show notes at maccast.com. But what I decided to do was, hey, I might want to use this over and over again. I set up a text expander snippet for it with a fill-in field. So I have this long string that's all common, and then I just have a simple fill-in portion for where the URL needs to go. So I can now just type my text expander snippet into the terminal. It will automatically expand, and then I just have to type in the URL that I want to assign to that file, and it will type out the command for me. And then once again, I just drag whatever file I want to attach that metadata to into the terminal. It pastes in the path. I hit enter, and now I have the where from metadata on that file. And so once I've run this command, I can actually go to that file in the Finder. I can choose get info, and then under the more info section, I will now see this bit of metadata. And like I said, best of all, once that metadata is attached to that file, that becomes searchable in Spotlight or in the Finder. So I can go into the Finder and do a search, hit Command F, and then at the top of the Finder window, I can go in and I can choose to add search criteria. And this is another feature that I think a lot of people don't know about search in the Finder. So when you're doing a Finder search, not a Spotlight search, but just in the Finder, you hit Command F and you bring up the search window and you begin your search, there is along the top of the search results a little bar where you can add search criteria. There's a little plus symbol. And that gives you a drop down with a number of different options. If you pull that drop down and you choose other, you can see all the types of metadata on files that you can actually search. And so you can go through that list. You can either search for it or find the where from attribute, select that or search criteria, click OK, and then you can type in a search just for that, the value that might be in that bit of metadata. So in this case, I can search for the URL that I plugged in with my text expander snippet, with my command. And so I could organize all of my screenshots from Safari into, you know, where they came from. And I think that might be what you're looking to do, Rick. So maybe this is a workaround to achieve what you want. A maybe simpler way might just be to use the comments field on the files, though, if you don't want to specifically put it into a specific bit of metadata. And that's searchable by Spotlight and by the Finder as well. So there's different ways to do that. You could also use tags, I guess, potentially, if you just want to put that in. So I'm just thinking of some other ways you might be able to organize this data and help find these screenshots. But I just thought this was a great feature of Mac OS that I didn't really know much about, like how these attributes, these extended attributes, get assigned to files. So that's how all this stuff works. And then, you know, again, you can then leverage built-in search to find this stuff. And what's great about these search criterias is there's all kinds of bits of metadata that you can actually search for. So you can search for, you know, things like the pixel width of files. So if you only want to find all your image files that have a pixel width of 500 pixels, you can do that, or a specific height. Or if you want to search your audio files for a certain musical genre, you can do that as well. The list goes on and on. So I would encourage you to check this out if you've never played with search criteria before in Finder search, and see what's available to you. You can even do things like create and or types of searches. If you hold down the option key when you click on the plus button, it'll change to a dot, dot, dot. And when you hit that, then you can do searches where you combine different search criteria, and it either has to match all of those search criteria or it can match any of those search criteria. So and or type searches are possible as well. And then one other thing I'll point out is that all of these search criteria also are available as what's called search tokens, both in Spotlight and in the Finder search. And that's where you type the kind of name of the search criteria plus a colon and then the search value. So for example, kind is one of the tokens, just the word kind, K-I-N-D. So if you type K-I-N-D colon and then JPEG and hit enter, the Finder search is just going to return searches for JPEGs. And then after that, you could put a specific search term or add in another search token or criteria, and you can really start to build these powerful searches. Pixel width that we mentioned earlier is another one. You can type the word pixel width, all one word, colon, and then a value like 1200 pixels or 1200, and it will find every file that is 1200 pixels wide and show that in the search results. And again, you can combine these and do all kinds of powerful searching in the Finder. So there you go. A simple question about how to make a screenshot. This is how it turns into a tip on the MacCast on how to do power searching and how to do metadata attribute assignments, extended attribute assignments to files on the Mac. So I love you guys. I love this community. Thank you, Rick, for sending in your, albeit what should have been a simple question and allowing me to turn it into a kind of learning opportunity for myself and the community. And once again, if, this is kind of my convoluted way of answering the question, I guess I've overly complicated it. I am sure there likely is some third-party tool or bit of software that just does exactly what Rick is looking for. And if you know about that, please email me and we'll share that on a future episode of the MacCast. But again, thank you for sending in your question, Rick. Another thing that happened this week is I had a number of people email me, unfortunately, who were experiencing issues with iCloud, and specifically iCloud syncing issues. And anybody who's used iCloud for any period of time knows that this is something that happens. Like, everything's going along fine, and then suddenly one day you're noticing that you put in a new contact record on your iPhone or your iPad, and for whatever reason, it's not updating or showing up on your Mac. And everything else seems to be working totally fine, but hey, my contacts just aren't syncing. And it's not entirely clear how to fix that or what to do about it. And you might try a couple different things, trying to just update the record and seeing if that sort of forces a push, or it's never really clear like why or how iCloud is broken. You just know that it's not syncing anymore, and it's infinitely frustrating. You try everything you can think of to try and fix it, and it's just not working. And the solution, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, for a lot of people, and this again happened with a couple people this week, and I emailed them the solution and it totally worked. And it's the classic solution that we talk about when we're talking about problems with technology, is like, did you try turning it off and turning it back on again? And with our computers, that's really easy, right? We just reboot them, or we power cycle them, or we reset our iPhone, right? We power it off and we power it back on, or we go through a hard reset or whatever it might be. With iCloud, what's the equivalent of that? That's not like super obvious. Well, the equivalent of it is actually turning off iCloud syncing, either by hitting the toggles, or even kind of the bigger reboot of iCloud is you sign out of iCloud on your device and then you sign back in. But let's be honest, that's like scary as heck, right? Because iCloud has all of your data and it syncs, and it's like, what's going to happen when I sign out? Is it going to, like, suddenly I'm not going to have the data syncing, so it's going to go wipe out all my data in iCloud? And not only that, Apple doesn't do a very good job, and we've talked about this in the past on the show, of kind of explaining what's going to happen. It pops up all these like scary alerts talking about, that your data is going to be deleted on your device and it's not going to be there anymore. And it just is really frightening. It kind of sucks that Apple does that, and those dialogues can be a little bit scary and confusing. And then the other kind of part of it that makes people not want to do this reset is when you do it, you basically have to re-enter a lot of data or re-log into a lot of things when you turn it back on, including things like your Apple Wallet. So if you have all your cards in your Apple Wallet, all of those go away. You've got to re-add them. It's a little bit of hassle. It's not terrible, but it does. You have to re-sign into things like iMessage and FaceTime, and you know, it's just kind of like getting things back up and running again can be a little bit of a hassle. So I would definitely say this is a last resort. You know, if you've kind of tried everything, nothing else is working, really, with iCloud, and it happens to everyone. And you know, I don't know why things get stuck or why things break. It's just something that happens, and we've all been through it. And almost all the time, I found like the solution is log out of iCloud on the device that's having the problem, log back in, and that seems to just sort of rejigger it. It gets unstuck. And that worked for the two or three people that emailed me this week. You know, that was my suggestion to them. They did that and it fixed it. And it's important to know too, you know, despite all the scary warnings and dialogues, when you do sign out of iCloud, the information will stay in iCloud. Just because you're not logged in on your device anymore, it's not going to push up and wipe out the data that's in iCloud. So that should be safe as long as it's synced. Again, you know me, I'm paranoid about this stuff, so I would also make sure that you have a full backup of your device right before you try logging out and logging back in, just in case things go south. It really shouldn't. You should be totally fine. When you sign out of iCloud, it will also ask you if you want to keep a local copy of all your stuff, so you can say yes to that if you're really worried about it. But technically, it should just resync back up when you log back into iCloud and kind of turn everything back on. So just be prepared. You're going to have to take a little bit of time resetting some things up. But inevitably, it will fix some of these iCloud syncing issues. So that would be my advice to you. It worked for a couple of people, and I thought it was just worth talking about this week because it did come up with a few folks in our community. And while we're kind of talking about syncing, not necessarily with iCloud on this one, but with iTunes, you know, a lot of us have moved to kind of syncing everything through the cloud. I know that I, you know, for years did all of my syncing with my media library and everything through iTunes, like a lot of us did. I was reticent and hesitant to move everything into the cloud, but eventually I got more and more comfortable with it. And now with my iPhones and my iPads and my Mac and everything, I am syncing almost everything wirelessly through iCloud. So documents and desktop, I'm using that feature. I do all of my music through Apple Music. I do my podcasts all, you know, online. I'm not really using what's built into my Mac anymore locally, right? So I've moved to that model, but that's not a model that everybody is comfortable moving to. And since iTunes went away, there's still a lot of confusion about, hey, if I want to sync directly to my music library and my movie library and my podcast library, how do I do that now? Because it all used to be managed through iTunes, and now I've got the podcast app, I've got the TV app, I've got the music app. I really don't know where my library is necessarily, and I don't know how to bring up the interface to be able to actually sync all that stuff. And it's definitely confusing, and I do get a lot of questions about this. And again, it's something that came up in our community this week. And I think the first thing to know is that you still can do it. You definitely can sync your device directly by, you know, connecting your device with a lightning cable to your Mac and syncing it through your machine. The way it's accessed now, because there is no iTunes, is directly in the Finder. So you should be able to connect your device using a cable, and it should show up in the sidebar of your Finder. If you're not seeing it, you probably want to make sure you go into the preferences and make sure that it's checked on and that it will show up. But it should just show up in the sidebar on the Finder, and you should be able to select it there. And once you select your device there, it will show an interface that looks almost identical to the interface you used to see when you went into the settings or when you selected your device in iTunes. And you'll see all of the different tabs. One thing I would recommend that you do is you may want to, once you select it in the Finder, check the box on to allow your device to be shown when it's on Wi-Fi, and then you don't necessarily have to physically connect it with your cable if you don't want to. Just make sure that, and this is another thing that trips people up, make sure, myself included, because when I was demoing this or trying to, you know, set this up to cover for the show when I was doing my show notes, I forgot to do this. So when you make a change to the settings, you do need to make sure that you go down to the lower right corner and click the apply button. If you don't click the apply button, the settings don't get updated on your device and you'll be left wondering, why didn't that work? So every time you make a change and you want it to stick, you do have to click the apply button, and then it'll resync and then all those settings will change. And that really hangs people up. But once you're connected, you should have, and you've selected your device, you should have all the old tabs that you used to have for syncing things like your movies, your TV shows, your podcasts, your files, all of that stuff. And you should be able to continue to use it just like you did when you were using iTunes. Now, for syncing your media files, something that is a little bit different is you do need to make sure that the individual apps have their settings pointed at your media library. So specifically the TV app and the music app. So you'll want to open those up. If you're having trouble syncing, or you're like, you're connecting to your device, but you're not seeing your movies, or you're not seeing your TV shows, or you're not seeing your music to actually be able to physically sync, you might want to double check your settings for the individual apps. The TV app for your TV and movies, and the music app for your music, go in, open the app, go into the preferences, click on the files tab, and make sure that you're pointed at your media library where your media files are. And as long as that connection is good, you should be able to set up your syncing and again, do everything direct from your Mac to your device. Now, podcasts, you don't have that option, so it's just built in. The operating system should know where your podcast files and your podcast library is, so you don't need to worry about it there. But that is how you can actually sync content directly from your Mac to your device. It should all be built in. Now, again, the interface, some would argue, and I would tend to agree with them, isn't ideal. It's not really great. It has, I think, gotten a little more confusing since it's done this way versus in the days of iTunes. But there are some third-party apps you might consider, too, as alternatives. So an app like iMazing has the ability to sync your files, your media files, directly from iMazing to your device. And maybe you'll find that interface a little bit simpler. If you want to go even simpler, there is a great application called Walter, W-A-L-T-R, Walter 2 specifically, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. The whole point of this application is you open it up, it's kind of a single interface, you connect your device will be there, you literally drag any kind of media file, PDF, audio file, video file, doesn't even matter what format it's in, drop it on Walter, and it will, if it needs to, convert that into a format that's compatible with your device, and it will sync it over to your device and put it in the proper location. So if it's a movie or TV show, it will go into the TV app. If it's a music file, it will go into the music app. If it's a PDF or an ebook or something like that, it's going to go into the books app. So it will sync that over for you, and you can drag in bunches. And so that wouldn't necessarily be tied to your media libraries. It could. You could drag files from your media libraries onto Walter and it would kick those over. But that might be an option for folks who maybe want to more manually manage their content in terms of their media files and those sorts of things. So a couple of different options to check out there if you don't want to go the route of, you know, using the built-in functionality that's in the Finder in current versions of macOS. So hopefully that helps you out. Hopefully that helps clear up some of the confusion about how you do that. And if you have any more tips and tricks related to this, feel free to share them with us in the community. Okay, last thing that I have for you today is a pretty neat little thing of the moment. This is something I ran across when I was doing my research. I think might have been through an article on 9 to 5 Mac. I don't remember specifically. But there's a new app out there for, I don't want to say managing your media, because that's not really what it's for. What this app is for is, you know, all those times when you're having a conversation with someone, or maybe you're doing a chat with someone, and somebody brings up a piece of content or entertainment or media. I don't know what the generalized term is. They bring up something and it's a book or it's a game or it's an app or it's a podcast or it's a TV show or a movie or something like that. And you're like, hey, I would really, that sounds interesting to me. I would like to play that game or I would like to watch that TV show. And you just want to, like, remember it. You want to record it. And that's what this app is. The app is called Sofa. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But the idea is it's an app for making lists of things that you want to check out later. Movies, music, video games, podcasts, board games, books, audiobooks, and apps. And it allows you to organize lists in any way that you want. You can set up multiple lists. You can add different groups. And then once you add something to your list, oh, and it'll help you search for that thing. So basically, if you want to add a movie, for example, someone mentions a movie, you fire up the app, you click the add button, you say, hey, I want to add a movie, and you just do a search for the movie, and it will bring up the, you know, poster art for that movie. It'll bring up a small description, and then you can add it to a list. So you could add it to your movies list. You could add it to, you know, a list called things I want to watch, whatever you want, right? You can create your own lists. You can use the built-in lists. And then what you can do is once you actually watch the movie, you can then go in and either mark it as done, hey, I watched that movie, or you can click a log and keep option. So if you want to, like, keep a list of the movies that you watched, and when you hit the log and keep, or when you hit done, it goes into an activity log. So you can see a running activity of when you've kind of acted on that thing. You followed up and you played that video game, or you listened to the podcast, or you played that board game. And it allows you to kind of track that sort of thing. And there's also kind of a handy little thing called the pile, which is a sort of default list. So if you don't want to organize or categorize something right away, you can just throw it into the pile. You just, like, log it. You're like, hey, here's an app that someone mentioned. Let me throw it into my list and I'll just get around to it later and I can organize it later. I mean, really, it sounds crazy. It's a super simple thing, but it's a simple and elegant little app. And while it's not intended, I don't think necessarily to be an app for, like, organizing your media or keeping track of your collection of things, I would imagine that you could use it for that. Like, I was looking at it thinking this would be a great way for me to manage all of my board games. I have a couple apps for that, but this would be nice to have all that stuff in a single place. So I could, like, log my book collection and my movie collection and my game collection in this app and just have all of those things in there. And not only that, I could then use the activity feature to kind of log and keep track of how many times have I watched this movie? How many times have I played this board game? That sort of thing. And so it's interesting. I'm actually really, really enjoying it. And not only that, another cool feature is that you can, once you have all of that content in there, you can export it to, like, a CSV file or even a markdown file. You can also import it. It has a backup to iCloud, so if you want to backup that library, you can do that. And best of all, the app is totally free. The only thing that is paid for is it does have in-app purchases, but just for themes. And actually, there's a way for anybody, I think, to create themes and add those to the library of growing themes. So they have a bunch of different themes. You can pay for those, but if you don't want to, it's got three built-in themes. It's got a light theme and two dark themes, and you can just use the app. And I thought it was really pretty cool. So I'm enjoying it. It's for iOS. It's called Sofa, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes at Mattcast.com. And it's this week's thing of the moment. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the Mattcast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for both Mac and iOS. You can get more information and details on their software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the Mattcast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at CacheFly.com. And all advertising on the Mattcast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the Mattcast, you can send your emails or audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the Maccast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mattcast. You can check out the Mattcast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMattcast, or you can find me on Instagram at Mattcast. That is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.